Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Getting you set for the biggest game since Super Bowl 50. Sunday night showdown between the Broncos and Chiefs at Arrowhead. Live from Lake Street Tavern, here's Stokely and Zach.
Time to fill in the blank ahead of Sunday Night Football. Just a massively important game for the Denver Broncos. Right now, and we went over this a little bit yesterday, James. James Merrillette, DenverFan.com, filling in for Stoke today. Stoke will be back on Monday. The probability and how it changes, and in fact nearly doubles, if the Broncos can pull off the upset. Now, they're expected to lose, let's be honest. They're nearly a 10-point underdog. Right now, our friends at Superbook, have it as a 9.5-point spread.
Which feels about right.
It feels about right.
Doesn't seem unfair.
The probability right now for the Denver Broncos to make the playoffs is 26%. Okay, so about a quarter, which means, of course, that 74% likelihood is that they don't go to the playoffs. If they win, that probability goes up to 56%. 56%! You are on the doorstep of 60% likelihood with the Lions coming into town the following week. And it seems like, man, I know that it is a tall task. There's no question. But if they can do it, their path is kind of grooved ahead of them.
It is. Because you look at it, if they win, it's like, okay, they probably have to go 3-2 down the stretch to get in. And they have three home games. They play the Lions, the Bengals, and then the season finale against the Chiefs. So you would look at that and say, hey, this team, historically, how good they've been at home, maybe not under Vic Fangio, but how good they've been at home, the Lions probably are coming in here winless. It does start to shape up of like, all right, there's a very likely path at that point for them to get to the playoffs. Plus, they're atop the division, or tied to be atop the division, but they'll have a game in hand, head-to-head against the Chiefs,
right,
and it will have been in Kansas City. The
right
rematch will be in Denver, so it all starts to shape up to where at least there's a road that you can look at and say, that's plausible, it's doable. If they lose and they're 6-6, it's the same scenario in the last five, but going 3-2 gets you to, what, 9-8? You're probably not getting in at 9-8, not when there are this many teams that are, right around 500 and in the hunt. So it's a massive game for the Broncos. It's a massive game for the future of this franchise in terms of the direction that they're going to go at quarterback and at head coach. It is, we've been talking about it all week. It's the biggest game since Super Bowl 50. Standings-wise, it is. Feel-wise, it is. But also just sort of the ramifications.
Right, the math of it all.
Yeah, exactly. It's a monster game.
And it's incredible, and you just touched on this. How many teams headed into week 13 have five wins or more? I mean, it's uncanny. It's actually never been done.
It's 25?
We have the Patriots, the Bills, the Dolphins, the Ravens, the Bengals, the Browns, the Steelers, the Titans, the Colts, the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Broncos, the Raiders, the Cowboys, the Washington Football Team Club Organization, the Eagles, the Packers, the Vikings, the Tampa Bay Bucks, the Atlanta Falcons, the Carolina Panthers, the New Orleans Saints, the Arizona Cardinals, the Rams, and the Niners. 25 of the 32 teams in the league have five wins or more. It is the most teams with five wins at this point in the season in NFL history.
It's Pete Rozelle's dream. It's parody.
It really is.
Everybody essentially is 6-5, 5-6, kind of in that category. The other thing is there's no great team. There's really no runaway team that you look at it and say, oh, they're going to be the number one seed. What are the Cardinals? I think have the best record.
The Cardinals have the best record in the NFL at 9-2, but I mean, when was the last time we saw the Arizona Cardinals? It was a win against Seattle. The week before that, they got beat by 24 points by the Panthers.
Yeah. So they have the best record in football, but I don't think anybody looks at them and says, oh, they're a runaway, going to be the number one seed, shoe in to go to the Super Bowl by any means.
Absolutely not.
And same way in the AFC. I mean, the Titans were playing really good football there for a while, but does anybody really think that a Ryan Tannehill-led team is the best team in the AFC or the team that's going to just kind of breeze through the playoffs? Not by any means.
And not without Derrick Henry either.
No, so with 25 teams that all think they're in the hunt, and right now mathematically are in the hunt, and to some extent, Zach, there are 25 teams, maybe not all of those, but probably 20 of them that you could say, hey, if they get in, it wouldn't shock me if they won a game or two or even got to the Super Bowl. There weren't a lot of teams that you read that I said they have no shot against another team.
No. I mean, San Francisco feels like it's turned a corner here in the last couple weeks. The Rams and how loaded that they are. The Cardinals, the Bucks, the Packers with Aaron Rodgers, the Cowboys, who knows, the Chiefs and Tennessee. And how about Indianapolis in this last month? New England. New England could absolutely win the AFC East, and they're riding a six-game winning streak heading to Monday Night Football in Western New York. So this league is bananas right now.
Usually there's eight bad teams, eight really good teams, and then kind of 16 that are in the middle. This year there's seven bad teams because there's seven that didn't make that list. And then everybody else kind of is in that same category. Like, I do think the Bucks and the Packers are a little bit above everybody else just because of who their quarterbacks are. I think the Chiefs are above everybody else because of who their quarterback is. Other than that, I think they're all kind of the same.
And here's the thing.
Including the Broncos.
I'll say this. I wouldn't be shocked if the Bucs lost their first playoff game that they played. I really wouldn't.
I wouldn't be shocked.
I really wouldn't. And I know they beat the Colts in a really awesome football game last week. That was so entertaining. But within the last month, I've seen Trevor Siemian beat Tom Brady. I've seen Taylor Heineke beat Tom Brady. So, and obviously these aren't one-on-one matchups, but that's to illustrate you can get got on any Sunday in this league. So I'm fascinated by it. Let's take a look at the matchup here on Sunday night in Arrowhead. We look at the offensive side of the ball. This is an in-season Friday staple on a Bud Light Football Friday live from Blake Street Tavern. Can the Broncos offense hang with Mahomes and the Chiefs? We fill in the blank. I give you the sentence. There is a word or a phrase omitted, and you tell me what your forecast of that sentence is going to be. We always start with the starting quarterback. That is Teddy Bridgewater. So here we go. Teddy Bridgewater will have a blank type of outing on Sunday Night Football.
He will have a Teddy Bridgewater type of outing. Like, that's the good thing about Teddy Bridgewater. He's consistent. You know exactly what you're going to get. So my expectation on Sunday night is that Teddy's going to play like Teddy. He's not going to make mistakes. He's not going to make a bunch of flashy plays. He's going to frustrate the fan base because on 3rd and 8, he's going to throw a 5-yard completion. That's the stuff he's going to do. He's not going to beat you. He's either way, no matter what side, who you're rooting for, he's not going to beat you. If you're a Broncos fan, Teddy's not going to beat him.
He's not going to be the reason that you lose.
Correct. If you're a Chiefs fan, Teddy's not going to beat you. Now, he may manage it. He may drive the car, but he's not going to be the guy at the end of the day that you say, man, we couldn't stop Teddy Bridgewater. It's just that's not what's going to happen. Teddy's going to go out and play like Teddy.
All right. Javonte Williams will have a blank impact if he's the bell cow on Sunday night.
Big impact. But I think the key word in that isn't the blank that I filled in. It's the word if. If he's the bell cow. Now, he may get to be that because we talked about it in the last segment. Melvin Gordon is banged up. And
yep, he's got a hip and an ankle.
Even if he plays, you wouldn't think he'd get half the carries. But if they decide, hey, we want to give the ball to Javonte Williams 25 times, and they stick to it, I think he will have a big impact on the game. Doesn't mean they'll win, but I think it will be very similar to last year when Melvin Gordon had a big impact on the game, kept the Broncos in it. They lost 22-16. That was a close competitive game with the football in Drew Lock's hands in the final minute with the chance to go win because Melvin Gordon was effective on the ground. I think Javonte Williams will do the same thing on Sunday night.
What does a big game from rookie Javonte Williams look like?
More than 120 yards.
More than 120?
If he's the bell cow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if he gets the ball 25 times, I would expect him to – I mean, him averaging 5 yards a carry isn't crazy.
No.
That's 125 yards. So I think that's the kind of – I mean, last year I think Melvin had 150-plus. I think he had 156, something like that. He had the one long run that almost turned into a touchdown. He got caught from behind like a 60-yard run. Like, he had a really good game in there a year ago. So I think it's going to be that kind of a night for Javonte Williams if they stick with it. But it also wouldn't shock me if Pat Shurmur goes in there and tries to outsmart everybody and plays three wide the whole time, and Teddy throws 44 passes. That wouldn't shock me either. Now, that would be foolish, but it wouldn't shock me.
Now, let me ask you this, and I don't want to bust your chops too much, but how on the heels of you saying that if he's the bell cow, he's going to go for 120 yards in primetime, but that's the same guy you don't see anything special about?
I mean, 125 yards isn't special.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Dude, if you did 125 yards every week, you'd be the all-time leading single-season rusher.
Right. I'm not saying he's going to get 125 yards every single week. I'm saying I think he can get 125 yards on Sunday night if he gets the ball 25 times. If he does it every single game, clearly he would be special. He'd be breaking Eric Dickerson's record. But I just think he's has the potential to be a very good back. I don't know why that's a controversial stance.
All right, I'm not going to get too bogged down here. And by the way, your reference of Melvin last year was a good one. The long run that you were referencing was 65 yards. It wasn't quite as big as the game that you said, which is why I wanted to double check. So I'm like, wait, did he have 156 as a Bronco? It was 131. That's a massive number as well, though. So give him his flowers on that. All right, we're filling in the blank, forecasting what we could see on Sunday Night Football when the Broncos travel to Arrowhead and play the big bad wolf, the Kansas City Chiefs. The banged-up Broncos offensive line will surrender blank sacks to the Kansas City defense.
Five. This is my big worry. It, not only because they're banged up, but having to play in that building, it is going to be raucous on a Sunday night. It is loud. You're getting you're a split second late getting off on the snap. I just think that's going to add up to being a problem. I think if they were completely healthy, I'd be worried about it. I think when you've got guys that are either not completely healthy or backups that are out there trying to play in that environment, I think it's going to be a problem. It's another reason why they need to run the ball as much as possible and give the ball to Javonte 25 times, is because if Teddy's dropping back, Teddy's going to be in harm's way, more so than normal. And I think it's something that, if you look through their road games this year, they certainly haven't had to play a place like Arrowhead in terms of dealing with crowd noise.
No.
Last year they had none of it. So when's the last time the Broncos played in a hostile environment on the road and had to deal with it? It's been a while.
Boy, that's a good question. Let's think about that for a second. So it would have to go back to the 2019 season.
I mean, they certainly didn't get – yeah, exactly, because certainly this year, what, they have the Giants? No, not really.
Jacksonville?
No. Dallas, that game, they got ahead so early.
I was
going
to say, they hit them in the mouth so early that you never really felt the crowd.
Yeah.
And in fact, we got to remember how many actual Broncos fans were actually there.
You're right. That was almost a pseudo –
Chargers game.
Or like when they go down to Arizona. Like, they really haven't had a hostile environment game in, I mean, it's December. It'll be December 5th. So it's been like probably two calendar years since they've had to play a game in a tough place, a tough environment with a raucous crowd. I think that has been one of the least focused on aspects of this game that I think is going to be huge.
Very interesting.
Is that they have to deal with that.
Yeah, and you know that the Broncos' presence, it's not going to be there like it was in Dallas. Or
no. It's not a destination game. Chiefs fans, they're loyal.
They are
loyal.
They're
not giving up their tickets.
No question.
They're not taking the easy buck to get out of the Sunday night game. Like, they're going to be
right
there. They're going to be there in full force. So that is going to be a lot to deal with. So I think it's one of those nights where Teddy's going to get hit a lot. It feels a little bit like the Baltimore game to me in terms of how he's going to get hit. I'm not predicting he's going to get hurt. Certainly don't hope he's going to get hurt. But you remember that game. He took shot after shot after shot.
No question. Yep.
So, and he only played a half, and he still took a ton of shots. I think it's going to be similar to that.
All right. We are filling in the blank here, previewing, forecasting Sunday night's game against Kansas City. Garrett Bowles, blank give up a sack or have a hold in his return to the field?
Will, absolutely. Yeah, I think it could be both, but I think he'll have a hold. I just can, like, if I'm thinking about the game and you can just kind of picture what Arrowhead looks like in a night game and just kind of the setting, and it's a little bit dark, and I can just see the official, staring at the sideline and giving us the signal,
holding
offense number 72. I will be stunned if that doesn't happen. Doesn't mean he's going to have a bad game. I mean, it's a bad play or two.
But a bad player, too, as an offensive lineman can cost you a game.
It can. It can get your quarterback hurt. It can cause a strip sack. It can lead to a lot of bad things.
And we've seen some of those holding calls take touchdowns right off the board.
Yeah. So, I you know, and it's certainly a game where down and distance, they got to be ahead of the chains. They can't – they're not going to go in there and win when they face 3rd and 15, 2nd and 20, those kind of things. So, but do I trust Bolsey coming back after a month to not have a hold or to not give up a sack? Absolutely not. If you made me pick, I'd say it's going to be a holding penalty, not a sack.
Okay. I will say this, and I heard Tyler reference this yesterday, and he's spot on. Bowles has regressed this year. Now, there's also something that he hadn't done in the previous 4 years, and that's missed time. That's one thing about Garrett. He was always out there. He had an injury. Then he had a COVID stuff. He's coming back into the fold for the first time in about a month. But when he has played, he hasn't been the 2019 version of himself. I think I heard Tyler say that Bowles has already given up 6 sacks. Think back to a year ago, like Pro Football Focus posting the tweet,
yeah,
that Garrett Bowles' longest streak without giving up a sack. He's come back down to earth a little bit, and the timing is not great because the Broncos just pulled out the checkbook and paid him.
Yeah, he's given up 6 sacks. He's only played in 8. Because he's missed the last 3 games, so
that's not a good
percentage by
no.
any means. You know, has he been though the turnstile that we saw with other players at that position? Ty Sambrylo, Michael Schofield. No,
he hasn't.
Not by any means. Has he been the holding machine that we saw against the Bears on that game that Stink called, where it was literally laughable how many times they called his number? No, he hasn't been that. He's been fine. They're paying him a lot more than
I don't think he's been fine. I don't think he's been fine.
But if you think back, what was the game where, like, Garrett Bowles blew it? It was a Garrett Bowles penalty. It was a Garrett Bowles missed his block. That's why they lost the game.
Okay.
Or even a big game-changing
play. I mean,
play.
I guess if we're, like, defining it by, like, you totally blew the game and lost it by yourself, that's a pretty interesting bar to use for your franchise left tackle.
I get it, but I can come up with plenty of games where, you know, it was Atlanta that came in here and Ty Sambrylo couldn't block Vic Beasley.
Yeah, I remember.
Right?
That
and then
bad.
There was an evening game, and this should have been a part of the vignettes, where the Chiefs came in here. And I felt bad for Ty Sambrylo. Like, why Gary Kubiak and the offensive coordinator didn't give him some help, it was play after play after play. It didn't matter who they put over there for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
It was just abusing him and getting into the backfield. Like, he hasn't had one of those games. And he hasn't had the Bears game where it was holding number 72 6 times.
It just hasn't been good enough.
I would agree with that.
Like, that's how I guess I would, at the end of the day, define it.
He's been fine, and he's getting paid to be one of the best in the league.
That's
so
right.
He's had a disappointing season.
Right, yeah. All right, we're filling in the blank forecasting Sunday Night Football. The leading receiver on Sunday night will be
Tim Patrick. And I'm saying that not because I have a great feel for it. I just think he's their most consistent receiver. Like, could it be Cortland? Sure. But Cortland, it seems like it's been a while since we've seen a really good game out of Cortland.
Yeah, about a month. He has had some nice plays, some, like, you know, third down conversions, thing, but obviously we're looking for more.
Yeah, we're looking for the kind of game he had down in Jacksonville. We haven't seen it.
No.
You know, could it be Jerry Jeudy? Sure, but he just hasn't really been the same since he came back from the injury. He's had a fairly disappointing season as well.
It's shaping up like that.
It is.
For Jeudy. It really is, and this is not anything that, like, a conversation that is welcomed. Obviously, we don't want it to be this way, but he missed some time, of course, and that's part of the evaluation as well, your availability for sure. But when he's been out there, he just hasn't been the game changer that you'd hope.
No.
And like, I'm watching last night. And forgive me, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I will in a second. But, like, I'm watching just, like, the way CeeDee Lamb looks.
Yeah.
Like, forget the stats for a second.
Just the eye test.
Just the eye test. He just looks different. And Jeudy has flashed like that a couple of times as a Bronco. But on a Sunday-by-Sunday basis, he doesn't look like a guy who just is just going to just change the dynamic of the game.
No, and if you compare him to, and CeeDee Lamb's a great example, but.
And he had about 90 yards last night, by the
Justin
way.
Justin Jefferson, not even in the conversation.
No.
Jamar Chase. Like,
no,
I mean, just guys who've come in and transformed their team's offense and are among the best players in football. Like, he's not even the best receiver on his team.
So
they just gave two other guys big money.
So Stokely and I last week actually did the exercise. We looked at that class, which was heralded to be the greatest wide receiver class of all time. We know that Ruggs went first, and Judy went second. But if you're being fair about it, if you're totally looking at it pragmatically, as in remove the emotion, Judy has not been one of the best five receivers in that class.
No, he hasn't been. He hasn't been. If they redrafted it, he probably would go about fifth or sixth. Like, I still think people would see his potential.
Sure, yeah.
And I still think people would look at it and say, well, some of his lack of production was the injury. That's fair. He has played, I think, 21 games now, though, as a pro. And he's also played with relatively mediocre quarterbacks, I think is fair. And he's played in Pat Shurmur's offense. Those are all reasons why he hasn't maybe been as good as some of those guys.
But we've also seen Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick thrive
exactly.
in those same environments and get paid because of it.
Exactly. So you can't have it both ways. And it's not as though all of those receivers are in great situations. Like, I think Kirk Cousins is an underrated quarterback.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
But it's not like they're all playing with Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, they're all down with Kyler Murray down in Arizona. And they're throwing it all over the yard. Like, that's not the situation. So, he's been disappointing. Could he have that? Sure. But what's the most memorable, if you take the entire season, starting at training camp till now, what's the most memorable play Jerry Judy's made?
This year, right?
This season.
From training camp till now?
I can tell you this. It was not in the regular season. That's my hint.
Was it in, like, that first preseason game?
The preseason game, the catch he had to move the chains. It was a little over-the-middle pass, and then he ran for, like, 30 yards from Drew against Minnesota.
I think in the regular season, the catch against Dallas, that was it went for about 25 yards when he had to go up and catch it. It was behind him.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, you know, I expect him to make that play.
Or it was the play he got hurt on, right? Like, that was a decent play.
That's right,
in
on the
New
left
York.
Sideline, right?
You know, probably a 20-yard completion. Like, not a huge play, but it was a pretty nice play. Like, that's it, though. Like, that's not what you expect out of your number 15 overall pick.
No, definitely not. All right, let's fill in a couple more blanks here. Noah Fant's longest play will be blank yards.
48. I think he's going to have a big play. I think he's going to have one of those games, though, where you look up and you're like, man, he had the 48-yard catch in the first quarter. How did he only end with three catches for 62 yards? Like, it's going to be that kind of game where it's all mostly going to come in one big chunk. I think they'll come out, have a pretty good plan. It's a team that very rarely scores on their opening drive. It wouldn't shock me if they did. And along the way, they had a big play to Noah Fant. I think he's going to have one big play on Sunday night.
Man, he needs it, and the Broncos need it from him. The offensive player I have the most hesitation about is...
Hesitation? I guess, and it's going to be funny because I said he's going to have a Teddy Bridgewater type day and he's consistent, but it's going to be Teddy Bridgewater. Like, this is a big moment. This is the big stage on the road against a team that's been to three straight AFC title games, two straight Super Bowls. You're not going head-to-head with Patrick Mahomes in terms of you're on the field, but you're on all the billboards and all the, you know, advertisements for NBC. It's Patrick Mahomes and Teddy Bridgewater. Which one of those guys do you sit there and go, I don't know if they're ready to answer the bell? Like, has Teddy Bridgewater been in many moments that are this big as a quarterback? He's been in the league a long time. He's calm and cool.
Yeah.
It's easy to be calm and cool on a Sunday at 1 o'clock in Jacksonville. It's a little different to be calm and cool at 7:20 in Kansas City on a Sunday night. Mm. Like, that's a different deal.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think he's going to be overwhelmed by the moment, but hesitation? Yeah, I mean, I don't think Javonte Williams is going to be overwhelmed. I don't know that... You know, anybody else is. I haven't seen it from Teddy Bridgewater, so that'd be my answer.
All right, and finally here, real quickly, James, the offensive player I have the most confidence in is?
You're going to laugh, and you're going to want to bring up the subject again, but I'm going to say Javonte Williams. I know exactly what I'm going to get out of him if they give him the ball enough. I do. He's going to be very good.
Oh, I love you. All right, let's take a look back at one of these brutal losses along this 11-game losing streak to Kansas City. This one was the birth of the snow guy.
December 15th, 2018.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful.
A snowstorm greeted the Broncos at Arrowhead as Kansas City native Drew Locke made his first start in his hometown.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
The Broncos quarterback won 4 of 5 starts his rookie season, but it shouldn't come as a shock the lone loss would come against the Chiefs.
Locke trying to set it up, puts it upstairs, and now it's intercepted.
Let it snow.
The snow didn't slow down Patrick Mahomes, who amassed nearly 300 150 yards and two touchdowns in whiteout conditions.
Mahomes weaves out of trouble, sidesteps, throws, and gets the conversion to Watkins. Time for more Snow Angels.
With the Broncos losing streak to the Chiefs now at 9, the only hope in the Mile High City was their young quarterback. Lockwood learned from the loss and developed to finally give Mahomes a formidable foe. Unfortunately, that would also be for naught. Does the streak end Sunday night? It's the biggest game since Super Bowl 50. Broncos, Chiefs, Arrowhead, this Sunday.
All right, we know how massive of a task it is, and we don't have long to wait. It'll be a little over 48 hours from now that we will be watching that game. Can the Broncos get off the schneid and break one of their longest losing streaks in the history of the organization going back to the 1960s? All right. Speaking of big games, man, it's championship weekend in college football. The most interesting matchups and what you need to know is coming up next.
Getting you set for the biggest game since Super Bowl 50. Sunday night showdown between the Broncos and Chiefs at Arrowhead. Live from Blake Street Tavern, here's Stokely and Zach.
What an exciting weekend on the college football front. Championship weekend, and it starts tonight. You got number 17 Oregon playing number 10 Utah. That game is on at 6 o'clock on ABC. That's a big stage for the Pac-12. That league pretty much has it, the stage unto itself. I think there's one other championship game, I want to say UTSA or something like that later tonight. But in terms of big college football, the Pac-12 front and center tonight. We talked about this right at the top of the show. Utah blew out Oregon like 2 weeks ago. What was the score?
38-7.
38-7. I mean, that is a beatdown of epic proportions. They play 2 weeks later, and the number is 2.5.
I think it was that night, too. I think it was.
I think it was, you know what? You might be right.
And that's what attracted me to it, of like the number 3 team in the country is getting points. They have everything in the world to play for, and they got boat race. So it's the same. I think it's the same number roughly tonight.
And I looked at that time and said, this doesn't make any sense. The public is hammering Oregon. I'm going to go ahead and jump on the Utah train, and that thing rode all the way to the finish line. Didn't even need to watch it in the second half, really. I think Oregon upsets them tonight.
I do, too. I think they're going to get their revenge tonight. I think that Utah's better than maybe people think. I think at the time they were 23rd in the country. They're all the way up to 10 now.
Correct.
But I think Oregon is better than what they showed in that game. I think they'll come out. It's always tough to beat a team twice. It's especially tough to beat them twice in 2 weeks. I think Oregon comes out tonight and gets the win.
I think so, too. Tomorrow, you got number 9 Baylor.
Although Utah in the Rose Bowl, that's never happened, right? I mean, they've only been in that conference for a little while. So Utah with a chance to go to the Rose Bowl. That's a drivable game. I'm switching. It's a drivable game for all the Utes fans to go to Vegas. They're going to have a ton of people there. I'm switching. I'm going Utah.
You're going Utah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I can tell you this. If I am the head of the Rose Bowl committee, I am rooting like crazy for Oregon, because as a football brand, you want Oregon in the Rose Bowl and not Utah.
It's the biggest game since Urban Meyer took Utah to the Sugar Bowl. It's the biggest game Utah's played.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm going to go with the Utes tonight.
Okay. I'm on the other side of it. You got a number 9 Baylor against number 5 Oklahoma State. That game is first thing tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. on ABC. Man, what Gundy's done there with Oklahoma State, I just question this. After an emotional rivalry win against Oklahoma a week ago, can you turn right back around and beat a really good Baylor football team?
Yeah, so they both beat Oklahoma. That's Baylor's big win, right?
Yep.
You know what? And I'm going to fall into the same trap I did picking Oregon two weeks ago. Because if Oklahoma State wins, they're going to the playoff. Because Alabama, just to get a little foreshadowing here, Alabama's going to lose to Georgia. So they're going to be out. This is for a shot in the playoffs. I think Oklahoma State's going to get it done.
All right. Well, we're fixing to find out. That's tomorrow morning.
Are you Baylor?
Yes, I'm Baylor.
We're split on both these?
Yeah, I think I'm going Baylor. I just don't like to turn around after that rivalry win. It's a lot to get up emotionally for. But we'll see. You got Georgia, who's the number one team in the country, playing the number three team in the country. This is, man, this is big time. This is prime time. This is front and center stage. Number one versus number three. Both are in the current college football playoff. That game is tomorrow at 2 o'clock on CBS. I agree with you. I think Georgia finally gets over the hump. I love their defense up front. I think they are going to get after Alabama defensively. But I also, and I'll just throw this out there, I think this is a low-scoring game.
I do, too. It just feels like the year where Georgia is significantly better, and I guess that's relatively speaking, than Alabama, right? Like, and Alabama's just had their number seemingly every single year. Like, this feels like the year they're going to finally get over the hump.
Yeah.
And they can knock them out, right?
Like, correct.
Because that's the other thing. It seems like both of them are kind of in this spot, and then they're both in the playoff all the time. And
right.
It's like Georgia can't get rid of Alabama. You can finally get rid of them. They're not going to be in unless something really wacky happens if they lose this game. The one thing that makes me worry, I could see us on New Year's Eve or whenever the first playoff game is saying, we're watching Alabama, and they were one play away from being out. If that kid doesn't run out of bounds for Auburn to stop the clock in that game, they're done. Like, they're out of timeouts, and they got the ball back with a minute 40
right.
instead of, like, you know,
however many
a
seconds.
Minute or yeah, however yeah, many, yeah, whatever yeah. it was. Or got it back with a minute instead of 20 seconds. That's what it was. It's like, I could see us in. We were so close to not having to watch Alabama, and here they are again. They're kind of that cockroach that just won't die. But I'm going to go with Georgia. I think it's finally their year. But that is the one part of me that gives a little hesitation. That team just won't go away.
Yeah, and I think two things are true here. One, you know, Georgia is the best team in the country. Two, Alabama's looked off this year. And I know they have won a bunch of games, but they have looked off. And there's a handful of games that you could point to. So we'll see what happens. I do like the under in this game. I think this is going to be a low-scoring game. Our friends at Superbook have it at 49.5. We'll see how it all shakes out tomorrow, 2 o'clock on ABC. This one I'm really looking forward to, this next one, because I've been following this football team all year long. You know, each year, and we've talked about this, I adopt a team that's just kind of my squad for the year. And it was Cincinnati from the kickoff week one. I tweeted about it. I said, a team that I'm going to have my eye on all season long is the Cincinnati Bearcats. Desmond Ridder has got better and better and better. And he's in his final season. They have a great collection of young talent, upperclassmen. I like their coach. I like their quarterback. I like their team. Their defense is crazy. Their secondary is stupid. And they're playing number 21 Houston tomorrow. At the same time, the Bama Georgia game is on. The Cincinnati game will be on ABC. They're trying to become the outlier. They're trying to become the non-Power 5 team that gets into the playoff. They're currently in right now, and I think they handle their business in a big way against Houston. The number on the game is around 10.5. I don't think that's enough. I love Cincinnati this weekend.
So I had my tinfoil hat on during the Bronco-Charger game saying we should have seen this coming, that the Broncos are getting every single call because the NFL wasn't going to flex in Denver, have them lose to the Chargers, and then have this Sunday night's game not be this marquee matchup that we've been talking about and you know, building up the hype all week long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we should have seen that coming. Houston is going to get every single call tomorrow because the committee does not want Cincinnati in there.
Really? You don't think so?
If Cincinnati's out, then they're going to get, well, Oklahoma State, but they have the chance to get Notre Dame. Notre Dame is six.
That's true.
So if Alabama loses... If Alabama wins, they're both going to be in there, and then either Oklahoma State or Notre Dame would get in if Cincinnati loses. But if you're the committee and you can map it out, and you can have Georgia, and you can have Notre Dame, it just to me, versus having Cincinnati, I think they're going to have to overcome not just the Cougars, they're going to have to overcome the officials. I'm calling the conspiracy theory before it happens. I got my tinfoil hat on Friday. I think the Cougars get every single call.
All right, we'll see if that magic bullet finds its mark.
If Houston wanted to take one for the conference, they would say, fine, you give us every call. We're just going to hand the ball off.
You got the Big Ten Championship. I'm fascinated by this one. Jim Harbaugh's number 2 ranked Michigan Wolverines against the number 13th ranked Iowa Hawkeyes. That's on Fox at 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Michigan, like, finally did it. They, like, finally got over the Ohio State stuff that, you know, could never beat Ohio State. And Harbaugh's got, you know, finally the team. It's his squad. It's his, like, this is his creation. And they finally got over the hump, and it just feels like, man, I think this is a low-scoring, one-possession game with an Iowa team that is hard to make go away.
So if it's if Iowa wins, I guess they get the Rose Bowl, right? Because they're not going to jump up into the four.
No.
If Michigan wins, they're going to be into the title game or into the playoff. Iowa then would still go to the Rose Bowl, right? Because they lost the Big 12 title game, so they would be the default team that would go. I think. I don't know. I don't know how that works. So not a ton for them to play for. They're going to the Rose Bowl either way. I think Michigan actually gets it done. I think Jim Harbaugh is one of the most unfairly maligned coaches in college football. I get it. He hadn't beat Ohio State. But that program was down when he got there. Like, they weren't particularly good.
Absolutely. You're right.
And for the most part, every year he's been there, they've been a really good team until they get to the last regular season game of the year and they can't beat Ohio State. And I know in that state and with that fan base, that's huge. But I think he's a really, really good coach. I think he's turned that program around, obviously, and I don't think he gets enough credit for it. I'm going to take Michigan.
I think Michigan wins. I just think it's closer than one might think. The numbers on the game, it's a double-figure spread. It's like 10.5. I may gobble those points up. And finally, number 15, Pitt at number 16, Wake Forest, ACC title game. That's at 6 o'clock tomorrow night on ABC. Any thought on this one? This feels like the least interesting of the championship games.
By far. The only reason I'll be tuning in is to watch Pickett because he's got some connection of a potential quarterback that the Broncos will be interested in. But, yeah, that just shows you right there. It's Clemson. And then it's a bunch of other teams in that conference. Once it's not Clemson, it's...
And by the way, this is the one year that Clemson has taken a year off. They started figuring it out down the stretch. They'll be back next year.
Correct.
So one of these teams is going to win the ACC title, and we'll see how it all shakes out.
I'll take Pitt.
I will take Wake and the points.
Okay, we might as well just flip the coin, Fangio style.
If you could only watch one of these games this weekend, what would it be?
Alabama, Georgia. I mean, I hate the SEC as much as anybody else. But, that's the game. It's 1 versus 3. It's going to be a really good game. The rest of them, watching Iowa, I think I'd rather go out and sand the deck. I mean, they talk about a boring football team. But Alabama and Georgia, I'm not going out on a limb by any means, but if you can only pick one, that's the game to watch.
I agree with you. It's kind of a no-brainer. All right, let's pick some games, man. Let's pick some games. We got a little skit.
The usual, right?
The usual, a little Twinkie.
Last time we were down here.
A little Venmo.
Yeah. I had a nice little weekend.
You did have a nice little weekend, and we're going to go head-to-head. NFL games coming up next.
Getting you set for the biggest game since Super Bowl 50. Sunday night showdown between the Broncos and Chiefs at Arrowhead. Live from Blake Street Tavern, here's Stokely and Zach.
Let's pick some games, man. Pick some winners. James Merrillat, DenverFan.com, filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Stoke will be back on Monday. We start with the Buccaneers. The 8-3 reigning Super Bowl champions traveling to Atlanta to play a middling under 500 Atlanta Falcons team. The number on the game looks like it's right about 11. This a blowout, James?
I don't know if it's a blowout, but I just cannot come up with a way in which Atlanta wins this game. Matt Ryan, to me, you think Frank Gore, you're going to be right, but Frank Gore is going to go in the Hall of Fame. Matt Ryan's going to go into the Hall of Fame at some point for the same reason. He's going to play forever. He's going to end up third on the all-time passing list. It's going to be Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, and Matt Ryan. He's one of the most uninspiring quarterbacks going. But I would not want Matt Ryan here. It's Matt Ryan, Jared Goff, they're the same guy to me. I'm going to go Tom Brady over Matt Ryan after that whole spiel. So, yeah, give me the Bucs.
Yeah, and Matt Ryan is going to go to the Hall of Fame. I will say this with your Frank Gore comparison. I like where your head is at. I will say Matt Ryan's brightest moments were brighter than Frank Gore's.
Agreed.
Can you think of a Frank Gore moment?
No.
Because he doesn't have one.
Which is why he shouldn't go in the Hall of Fame.
Matt Ryan at least won an MVP and brought a team to a Super Bowl. And, his peak was pretty darn good. But he ain't at the peak anymore.
Yeah, he also got to just throw the ball up for Julio Jones. Julio Jones made that guy look awfully good.
All right, we're both on the Bucks. We move along. We got the Chargers at 6-5, traveling to a really revived Cincinnati Bengals team. The Bengals are 7-4. They're the home team. They're a 3-point favorite, according to our friends at Superbook. Who you got in this one?
Cincinnati is one of those teams that is so Jekyll and Hyde, right? They'll go blow out the Ravens in Baltimore and then lose a game. You're like, how in the heck are they getting beaten this one? I think this is one of those games where coming off of a big win and everybody's back on Cincinnati. I think they lay an egg. I think the Chargers are desperate. The Chargers did not look very good in here, obviously, last Sunday. I think L.A. goes in and beats Cincinnati.
Okay, we have our first disagreement. I think the disjointed nature of the Chargers is real, and I don't think that goes away. I think the Bengals are a team that is seriously trending up, and I trust their running game. I trust their running game more, and I trust the home team. Two really bright young quarterbacks in Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. But don't forget about Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon has recorded multiple touchdowns in four straight games. Think about that. Multiple touchdowns in four straight games. That's the longest active streak in the NFL. That's the longest streak in Bengals history. No one's done it five straight games since Alvin Kamara did it years ago. So we'll see if he can get that. But I got the Bengals here. So that's
I think it's a coin flip game for me, but I'm leaning toward the Chargers. A rematch of the 1982 AFC title game.
Wait, so are you picking the Chargers?
Yeah,
or not?
Okay.
There's our first disagreement. The Cardinals at 9-2. What a sterling record there in Arizona. They travel to Chicago to play a 4-7 Bears team. The Cards are favored by about 7.5. Do you give the Bears a chance in this one?
No, I don't. I feel like the Cardinals haven't played in a month and a half. And maybe it's because the 2 weeks before they had their bye, it was Colt McCoy. I feel like Kyler Murray hasn't played in a year.
Right.
It feels like forever since
right.
Since he hurt his ankle on the final play of a game. I'm going to go with Arizona in this game. I think Arizona is actually pretty legit. And I think the Bears are a mess. I mean, they should have lost to the Lions on Thanksgiving for crying out loud.
And Matt Nagy looked like he won the Super Bowl.
He did. He was the
it's
most
like,
excited guy in America.
So if
Matt Campbell hadn't have Fangio'd that thing, I think they would have lost that game. So I'm gonna go with the Cardinals here.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Cardinals as well. It sounds like Kyler Murray's coming back. It sounds like all-pro receiver DeAndre Hopkins is coming back. And Kyler Murray, man, how about that? 73% completion percentage. Not only does it lead the NFL, it's on pace to be the third highest rate in a single season in NFL history. Wow. There's accurate, and then there's whatever Kyler Murray's been this year. Let's move on. We have the New York Giants at 4-7, traveling to Miami to play the 5-7 Dolphins. Hey, Dolphins have been playing good football here. They haven't lost in the last month, and don't look now, but Tua has been very, very competent. I mean, he's been effective. There's no question about it. He hasn't been lighting the world on fire, but his completion percentage this month has been absurd. I like the Dolphins to take care of business of the Giants, who will come down after upsetting Philly a week ago.
Yeah, I'm with you here. I don't trust that offense, but I think Brian Flores has done a really nice job with their defense. I don't believe Daniel Jones is going to play. And not that Daniel Jones is great by any means, but if Daniel Jones isn't going, I like that Giants offense even less than normal. Look, the Dolphins were 1-7 at one point. They've won four straight games. They got the Giants this week, the Jets next week. Like, it's talk about right in front of you, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what the Broncos always like to say. It's right in front of us. You can get to 500 after being 1-7 if you take care of business at home against the Giants and then next week against the Jets. Like, that
impressive.
That's the definition right in front of you. I don't think they stub their toe. I don't think they mess it up. I think the Dolphins win this game. I think that's one of those you're like, red zone will never go to that game.
Yeah.
At the end of the day,
like that game belongs in London.
Yeah, exactly. The Dolphins and the Giants played, like, they'll never show it because nothing's going to happen.
We've had some Bronco games like that.
Yeah.
like people watching red zone think it's a Broncos bye week.
It's 17-6. It's that kind of game.
Yeah, I mentioned Tua's completion percentage. I have a stat here to encapsulate it. Tua Tagovailoa has completed at least 80% of his passes with at least 30 attempts in each of his past two games. Believe it or not, that's the longest streak in NFL history, tied with Drew Brees, Peyton Manning. Really cool stuff there. All right, you got the Colts, who are 500, playing a really good ball. They're traveling to a bad Houston Texans team. The number on the game is about 10. Do the Colts blow them out?
Yeah, I think they do. And you know what? I'm probably buying into the in-season Hard Knocks hype. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch it.
I'm going to try to tackle it this weekend.
They could not have picked a better team because they started off slow and have had to dig their way out of that hole.
Yeah.
And then they got Jonathan Taylor, and he had the 5-touchdown game, and they went into Buffalo and blew out the Bills. Like, it is made for a really interesting storyline. So I kind of like that team after watching it. I like Frank Reich. I like Carson Wentz. Obviously, JT's maybe the best offensive player in the league this year. So I'm going to go with the Colts, not only to win, I think they're going to blow out the Texans.
You just call him JT now.
Yeah, well, I've watched the show.
Gotcha. All right. It's going to make sense when I see it. Carson Wentz has 21 touchdowns and 5 picks this season. That's the fourth best touchdown to interception ratio in the National Football League. When he doesn't have a turnover, that team's 5-1. When he does have a turnover, they're 1-5. So pretty simple formula
there. They beat
there.
The Bucks if he doesn't have a couple of bad turnovers in that game.
Yep, you're on it. And then last one we'll pick here in this stanza. You have the Minnesota Vikings, who are like, they're kind of like my side piece. They're 5-6. Never know what I'm going to get from them. They're traveling to Detroit, playing the 0-10-1 Lions. Vikings favored by a touchdown. Lions stay winless and set up.
Yeah, I'm just confused by your analysis. Like, shouldn't your side piece, shouldn't you know exactly what you're getting from your side piece?
I say side piece because that's probably the wrong, first of all, that's the wrong way to say it. The Vikings are, they're like my second cousin who, like, if I don't see him in a year, like, really look forward to seeing him. If I see him on consecutive weekends, I'm like, I don't want to be around this person.
Okay, I got you. And they're the team I can't figure out. When I pick the Vikings, they lose. When I pick against them, they win. Like, I have no idea what they're gonna do. Can't find the pulse when it comes to the Vikings. I'm gonna take them on Sunday just because I so want the Viking or the Lions to come in here
winless. that's how I say it's setting up for it.
When it's Dan Campbell and Vic Fangio matching wits.
Oh my gosh,
Power
could you
Field.
Imagine?
Oh my gosh, that is gonna be just must see TV. So I'm gonna pick the Vikings just so that sets itself up.
Right, I love it. I love it. All right, can Vic Fangio's defense slow down the high flying Kansas City Chiefs? We fill in the blank. Defensive edition coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.